enough money in her account. This could, of course, happen to anyone. With this family, however, it happened with as much regularity as a Kathmandu power outage. Dreading the phone calls where she would implore me to wait a week before cashing the latest check finally took its toll, and I eventually told her that I wouldn't be able to tutor her son anymore. Was this supposed to be happening? After all, this woman had to be rich. She drove a Jaguar. She lived in a massive house. She wore a Rolex. Her husband was an investment banker who should have been doing the backstroke in the pools of money he made. It dawned on me that she might not have been rich at all. Just because someone collects a large paycheck and lives like Persian royalty doesn't necessarily mean he or she is rich. The Hippocratic Rule of Wealth. If we're interested in building wealth, perhaps we should all make a pledge to ourselves, much like a doctor's Hippocratic Oath. Above all, do no harm. We're living in an era of instant gratification. If we want to communicate with someone half a world away, we can do that immediately with a text message or a phone call. If we want to purchase something and have it delivered to our door, it's possible to do that with a mobile phone and a credit card number, even if we don't have the money to pay for it. Just like that seemingly wealthy American family in Singapore, it's very easy to harm our financial future by blowing money we don't even have. The story of living beyond one's means can be heard around the world. To stay out of harm's way financially, we need to build assets, not debts. One of the surest ways to build wealth over a lifetime is to spend far less than you make and intelligently invest the difference. But too many people hurt their financial health by failing to differentiate between their wants and their needs. Many of us know people who landed great jobs right out of college and started down a path of hyper-consumption. It usually began innocently. Perhaps with their handy credit cards, they bought a new dining room table, but then their plates and cutlery didn't match, so they had to upgrade. Then there's the couch, which now doesn't jive with the fine dining room table. Thank God for a Visa. Time for a sofa upgrade. It doesn't take long, however, before our friends notice the carpet doesn't match the new couch, so they scour advertisements for a deal on a Persian beauty. Next, they're dreaming about a new entertainment system, then a home renovation, followed by the well-deserved trip to Hawaii. Rather than living the American dream, they're stuck in a mythological Greek nightmare. Zeus punished Sisyphus by forcing him to continually roll a boulder up a mountain, only to have it maddeningly roll back every time it neared the summit. Many consumers face the same relentless treadmill with their consumption habits. When they get close to paying off their debts, they reward themselves by adding weight to their Sisyphean stone, which knocks them back to the base of their own daunting mountain. Buying something after saving for it instead of buying it with a credit card is so 1950s. At least that's how many consumers see it. As a result, the 21st century has brought mountains of personal debt that often gets pushed under the rug. Before we learn to invest to build wealth, we have to learn how to save. If we want to grow rich on a middle-class salary, we can't be average. We have to sidestep the consumption habits to which so many others have fallen victim. According to the Wall Street Journal, the average U.S. household in 2010 was strapped with $7,490 in credit card debt. A Huffington Post business article reported in 2011 that 23% of Americans owed more money on their mortgages than their homes were actually worth. In Nevada, 66% of homeowners could sell their houses and still not have enough money to pay off their mortgages. Now here's where things get interesting. You might assume it's mostly low-salaried workers who overextended themselves. But consider this. According to U.S. author and wealth researcher Thomas Stanley, who has been surveying America's affluence since 1973, most U.S. homes valued at $1 million or more, as of 2009, were not owned by millionaires. Instead, the majority of million-dollar homes were owned by non-millionaires with large mortgages and very expensive tastes. In sharp contrast, 90% of those who met the defined criterion to be a millionaire, having a net worth of more than $1 million, lived in homes valued at less than $1 million.